Welcome back, clinical problem solvers. We're thrilled to be partnering up with the Human Diagnosis Project again this week. You will hear us tackle three cases which will be released on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. If you've listened to our Human DX episodes in the past, you'll notice a different format this time around.
This time you'll see that a medical student or resident will be sharing the hot seat with a clinical problem solver. Our primary goal will always be to practice and share our clinical reasoning, but we are also heavily invested in promoting a culture that normalizes sharing your thinking and knowledge, no matter what level of training you have.
So we think that one big barrier to being able to do so in medicine has been this fear of the words, "I don't know." We've all been in a situation where the fear of acknowledging our limitation in our knowledge and reasoning has led us to hold back and not share our thinking and practicing these crucial skills. So by tackling cases as a team, we hope to decrease the stress of publicly discussing, normalizing limitations of our knowledge, and also learn from one another in this podcast and hopefully model what happens in real world between all of us.
Now, I know this sounds lofty, but with your help, we hope to transform the meaning of the words "I don't know" in medicine from representing inadequacy to opportunity, to grow and learn. Hey folks, just a quick reminder that this podcast is not meant to be used for medical advice, just good old-fashioned education.
Welcome back, clinical problem solvers.
Woohoo!
Team, we have Rez, Charmin, and RC in the lukewarm seat. We don't call it the hot seat anymore, even though I'm going to make it extra spicy for them all today.
Robbie, I feel like the seat is on fire right now, man.
We're thrilled. This is another case of our Human DX series, and we got Dr. John Ritzenstein's case today, and I'll kick it off. So the chief complaint is syncope. This is a 63-year-old man who presents, who was previously well, very active, and actually witnessed passing out minutes after completing a game of tennis with his friends while sitting and talking. So a little bit more detail. He lost consciousness for about 10 seconds. There was no CPR performed. Details from EMS. So he got an EKG that showed sinus bradycardia with a heart rate of 44. A fingerstick glucose was 88. The blood pressure was 116 over 76, and his temperature was 37.2. He had no memory of the fall and couldn't recall any loss of consciousness otherwise. And he kind of said, "I feel fine," both to EMS and in the ER. He was actually completely asymptomatic during the game of tennis and noticed nothing out of the ordinary prior to passing out. He's been playing tennis weekly for a long period of time without any issues. In terms of some pertinent negatives, so he does not have a headache, doesn't have any vision changes, no shortness of breath, no chest pain, no dizziness, and no palpitations. A little bit of social and medical history. So he's actually very athletic, plays tennis 3 to 4 times a week, and continues to ride bikes 1 or 2 times a week. His wife reports 1 to 2 brief near syncopal episodes in the past that he doesn't recall. He has not had an evaluation for these 2 episodes. So he's no medical conditions apart from what we just discussed, no medications, no drug use, and does get routine access to care.
First of all, I'm just going to give a shout out to RC for winning a teaching award. He is incredible. I am not surprised, and I'm super proud to know him. And I'm just so glad you're on my team now.
Always on your team, Charmin.
And the other shout out is to Dr. Stephanie Sherman for coming and doing a syncope episode with us. So that's going to be super helpful.
Thank you, Steph.
Yes, Steph.
Alrighty, so I'm just going to kick us off. And so this is a 63-year-old coming up with an episode of syncope. One thing that from the get-go that kind of jumped out to me is like playing tennis and syncope. And my mind just like always goes to subclavian still syndrome for some reason. I'll just like keep that in back of my mind. A loss of consciousness for about 10 seconds that was seen and witnessed. And so thinking about Syncope and the mimickers of syncope being seizure, stroke, hypoglycemia, always keeping that in mind. I'm glad they got a glucose check that was 88. One thing that jumps out as well is a bradycardia 244. I'm thinking about the buckets of syncope that we talked about in previous episodes, like reflex, orthostasis, and cardiac. AV block, especially like a third degree AV block, can definitely cause a syncopal episode. So that's something that I'm suspicious for and would love to get an ECG. The fact that he's had like prior maybe two episodes of presyncope in the past, I would be curious to get some more information about what was he doing during those episodes and the history in that way. The fact that he hasn't no significant past medical history, is it because like he hasn't been to a doctor or he's been largely out of care or that he's like a pretty healthy guy are the things that I'm thinking through. The negatives, like no headache, no vision changes, shortness of breath, all of these are helpful to a certain degree, and the fact that he didn't have any like prodromal symptoms, it makes kind of like the vasovagal type a little less likely. So those are my initial thoughts. RC, Rez, help me out here.
Charmaine, I don't think there's anything left for us to discuss. I think you busted this whole case wide open with what you laid out. I honestly don't have anything to add. I think your framework is perfect, and we'll see how this pans out. The things that I get excited about is if there are any like structural cardiac issues, like a atrial myxoma, something that would really present when you're exerting yourself. So, but it's a really interesting case. I think it sounds like syncope. And I think the three buckets that you listed will capture it. We just have to see which bucket to put it in, but we'll see how the case pans out. It's exciting.
And yeah, I want to just echo what Ashley said, Charmaine. That was such a great foundation. You haven't really left much for us to discuss. Thank you for that. The thing that, you know, initially, if this was his first episode of syncope, it's easy to frame it as someone who's exerting himself, might be dehydrated, and is experiencing orthostatic hypotension. But the reason I pause with that diagnosis is the fact that he had two near episodes that his wife noticed, but he himself did not witness. That increases the likelihood in my mind of some type of arrhythmia as opposed to, you know, orthostatic hypotension or reflex causes of syncope, like situational syncope or vasovagal. So I think it's the history and his heart rate of 44. He is athletic, but that still seems a little low. That makes me pause and worry about an arrhythmia like you said, Charmaine.
Terrific. All right, let me give you a little bit more data. So in the ER, they got some diagnostic information. The troponin was negative times 2. The CBC was normal. The comprehensive metabolic panel, so the basic metabolic panel and the LFTs were normal. And the chest x-ray was normal.
It's reassuring. I'm happy for this gentleman. And then just to go back to the definition of syncope, just a transient loss of consciousness due to global cerebral hyperperfusion. So we're thinking something that would be temporary. And then I'm not too surprised that these are normal. And then the CMP, that is helpful. You know, if we're thinking orthostasis, he might have an AKI or electrolyte derangements that could predispose him to arrhythmia. So that this is giving us a little bit of reassurance.
Yeah, actually, I love that. And the one other thing to consider when someone presents with syncope is a pulmonary embolism. Now, yes, we know he's had two prior pre-syncopal episodes, so that wouldn't be consistent in this setting, but his troponins being negative also argues against the likelihood of a pulmonary embolism that causes enough RV strain causing syncope.
So let me give you a little bit more data to work with. A little bit of a physical exam review in the ER. So right now, he still stays in sinus bradycardia at heart rate between 40 to 50. On review of his prior EMR, his outpatient resting heart rate was also in the 50s. His vitals were otherwise normal. He continues to report feeling normal and is admitted for tele and cardiac stress testing.
Alrighty. So bradycardia, I mean, I don't know if there was an ECG done, probably. But like in terms of like bradycardia, just like running that differential in addition to the syncope and where it overlaps, I think about just like degeneration, like idiopathic, that usually comes with aging. I think he's a bit too young for 63, actually. I still think he's a bit too young for that. And that I also think like it means a diagnosis of exclusion. The other things that we like kind of talked about, like thinking about ischemia or like myocardial infarction, the trope was negative, so that is less likely. One category, like infiltrative diseases like sarcoid and amyloid, that can cause conduction issues in the heart, or like like collagen-induced vascular diseases too, are the other things that I think of. And also like infections, that I think is like less likely in him, but that can also cause bradycardia. The one other category that I was like thinking about, like especially with sinus bradycardia, is like medications like beta blockers, TCAs, but he's not taking any medications. These are the things that I'm thinking through for like the bradycardia. And I wonder like where, like kind of think about the Venn diagrams of like bradycardia and syncope, which means, which seems like to be his two presenting factors, where that overlay lays. I think some more information, like getting some labs done and seeing like if there's any changes with exercise, that is he able to increase his heart rate? And that would be also helpful. Alrighty, guys, help me out again.
Dude, I say, I feel every time she speaks, there's like very little I can add.
It's incredible. I just want to highlight some of the beautiful points you made. I think when someone is bradycardic, I think the number one step after noting that it's sinus, is see if they have chronotropic competence. Can you increase their heart rate on demand? Which is exactly what Charmaine said. And I think if you do that, that's much more reassuring. And especially we have a guy who's stated to be healthy and athletic. I wouldn't read too much into that at this point, especially if he has chronotropic competence.
I really have nothing to add. You know, a heart rate of 50 at rest should not cause syncope. But I love your point, Arsi, that when he exerts himself, which he was doing in tennis, if he does have chronotropic incompetence for whatever reason, that can certainly lead to syncope or lightheadedness. And even if the tele doesn't capture an arrhythmia and the echo is normal, I would send this guy out of the hospital with a vent monitor.
Mm-hmm.
And to just really capture for maybe a couple of weeks, like how his heart rhythm is, given this is, seems like his third episode of syncope, and the first two were pre-syncope. But I was curious, Charmaine and Arsi, like, we're admitting this patient to the hospital. I think part of this exercise is anticipating what tests to order. So what would we order for this patient?
In trying to get a little bit more granular with this, I localize sinus bradycardia to the vagal nerve. Right, whether that's physiologic or pathophysiologic, then that's something that we can like we'll have to delve into. But increased intracranial pressure could lead to this as well. I don't suspect it because we don't have any other symptoms to push us to consider that more. But you know, I think if his conduction system's okay on tele, then I think brain imaging. You know, I think it's early. I don't even want to go there. But I think that's another thing that we can, another tree we can bark up is intracranial pressures, possibly.
And can I ask you guys another question? Like in a patient who has syncope like this and you do a cardiac exam and you don't auscultate a murmur, do you still order, like what's our threshold to order an echocardiogram?
I would order an echo. I think the only two things that is going, like the syncope and the bradycardia, and thinking about just like a cardiac etiology, you would definitely want to evaluate with echo. Like you might just find information like a thickness or the valve abnormalities that you weren't looking for. So I would definitely get an echo in someone that I'm concerned about a cardiac etiology.
I love your question because I don't know what is cost effective, And I think that's something that I'll gain more and more experience with into my career. I agree with Charmaine in that I would order it too, but I don't know if that's cost effective.
And I'll tell you, like, so I'm in my fifth year of practice now. And although, like, I feel like I can auscultate a murmur, because what are some of the structural causes that lead to syncope include aortic stenosis, hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. And these structural defects have associated murmur that I think many of us can auscultate. That being said, I agree with Charmaine 100% in this case, because this to me is sort of like a high risk syncope. Like, there was no prodrome, there was prior episodes. So even if I don't hear a murmur, I still would order an echo for the reasons Charmaine mentioned in this case. It's much different than, let's say we have a patient, maybe pre-syncope, syncope with a really good story, and then you auscultate the heart and you don't hear any murmur, and the EKG is normal. Then I think it's safe to be done. But in a patient like this who had no prodrome, has no great reason for syncope, I think there's too much at stake to not get that echo, as Charmaine mentioned.
Oh, what a terrific breakdown of that question. I grapple with that all the time about like whether to admit patients like this or not, but you guys just really crystallized that concept so well. Awesome. All right. So let me give you some more information. So a couple of cardiology stuff coming your way. No surprises. So on Telly, the patient had normal sinus rhythm, had a rate between 50 and 60, and there were no arrhythmias noted. They actually went ahead and got a treadmill stress test, which will also give you an EKG. He actually did well. He exceeded 12 mets, and there were no ischemic changes at all on an EKG that had normal sinus rhythm. They also got an echo for the reasons probably that you all outlined so well. And his echo showed an EF of greater than 60% with no wall motion abnormalities and no flow abnormalities, essentially completely normal.
Very interesting. So yeah, I mean, at this point, I think if he's still admitted, I would discharge the patient on Telly. But I love what Charmaine's initial clinical suspicion of the subclavian steel syndrome. That's something that we could maybe test for. See if we can have him do heavy exercises with his arms to see if we could reproduce any symptoms. But at this point, I can't justify keeping this gentleman in the hospital, in my humble novice opinion.
Your opinion is anything but novice, actually.
Mr. Teaching Award here, minimizing himself. Yeah, he's a master.
I loved that RC. Yeah, I think now for me at this point, I'm like, okay, so we've evaluated the heart pretty well and we didn't find any abnormalities. And like, I've been thinking like, what else could be causing this type of symptoms and like subclavian syndrome, like something outside the heart. And like thinking about like our syncope schema, like those buckets, we really don't have a good story for any of them. So as you mentioned, now I'm thinking like about my syncope mimickers, like is this a patient who is at high risk of like, was that like a TIA episode or was that like a very focal seizure that wasn't generalized? I think I'm just trying to think now like outside the syncope bucket a little bit too while we're continuing to evaluate the patient.
Nothing to add.
All right. So just as you're about to discharge the patient, actually, which is how all CPS exercises go, everything's lovely and smooth and great until. So this is actually during the end of the treadmill stress test. So during the recovery phase, he actually loses consciousness again with loss of muscle tone and asystole noted on the EKG. He gets CPR for less than 30 seconds, and then he regains his consciousness, and the EKG is now back in normal sinus rhythm.
Wow. Did I expect this? No. It's a good thing he was on Telly. So what happened here? I feel like this should be a triggering something in the back of my brain. It's not triggering anything, but just like thinking through it. So it seems like he has a loss of muscle tone and asystole. Was this like a sinus bradycardia with a pause that caused an asystolic event? Is having like a six sinus type syndrome? And then he regains consciousness with a normal sinus rhythm. I don't know, honestly, what to make of this right now.
Yeah, this is really interesting. So he just went into asystole. I'd be curious to see how long that lasted before his rhythm came back.
I did love your point, RC, about like the vagus nerve. Whatever process happened, did it just like completely put him into a block of some sort that caused this? I do like that theory of yours.
So it's interesting. It seems that his events occurred during recovery. I don't know what to make of that, but it seemed like he was done playing tennis. He was done kind of exerting himself. So I don't know if we could link that to asystole by any mechanism.
You know, and I'm with both of you. Like, it seems like at this point in the case, it's our pivot point. So at least we'll make the teaching point about the pivot point, even if it's not about the discussion of the case. So it seems like this is the pivot point. And I agree, like the asystole, in my mind, converts to increase in parasympathetic tone and decrease in sympathetic tone. And what's happening during recovery that may lead to that? You know, we often, when patients are in SVTs, we might ask them to bear down, or we may massage the carotid sinus or have them blow through a straw. And the whole purpose of that is to increase vagal tone. And so asystole is different than a complete heart block. And the question is, why is this gentleman having increase, I think, in vagal tone during the recovery phase, Arce, as you mentioned? There's this phenomenon of seizures being associated with asystole and syncope, but I would expect him to have some post-ictal phase.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so where, before we even look at the next diagnostic test, where would we go from here as a group?
I love the point you brought up, Rez, about like the ictal kind of asystole seizure. And I wonder if it's like focal enough that just has an effect that causes syncope that you wouldn't actually have post-ictal. So I'm just like thinking out loud that if it's like focal enough that just like us happens, like a seizure that affects only causing an arrhythmia that causes the patient to syncopize, then you might not have post-ictal. So I would probably look at the brain at this point.
well,
get an MRI or like a CT scan.
I love the idea of looking at the brain. We're in neurology week. Yeah. I don't really have anything better to say.
I like it. I think that's very, very reasonable. I just don't know enough about seizures to make any sort of leaps like that. I mean, I think I've had a patient who was a little bit similar, and we did a tilt table test on her, and she just had like a 20-second pause, like a complete sinus pause. I don't know. I think an MRI or a tilt table test and maybe continuous EEG monitoring is a direction to go.
Yeah.
And that's just because I don't have a good sense of the direction.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. And the other thing is just thinking about like infiltrative causes that can cause bradycardia. I don't know what is the sensitivity of an echo for it. I think people usually get an MRI, cardiac MRI. I don't know if you're there yet, but that's like the other thought that was in the back of my mind.
If we were gonna Google this to get an answer,
yes,
what would we Google?
I love it. So what are our salient features? We got transient loss of consciousness and muscle tone after exercise.
Charmy, what do you think?
I would like a syncope, sinus bradycardia. What are the other two things that I would add?
You know what the first thing came up? How to avoid a misdiagnosis in patients presenting with transient loss of consciousness. Oh my gosh, Google is watching us, guys.
That's amazing.
I learned this from Andrew, but then I learned it also from Robbie. It was one of our teasers, right? How can seizure lead to syncope? Because I actually defined syncope so well as like hypoperfusion to the brain. But seizure is not hypoperfusion to the brain.
Mm-hmm.
It's abnormal electrical activity. And in his teaser, he taught us that Charmin like eloquently laid out some kind of seizure activity causing bradycard or asystole. But you know, the reason that, like, I guess I'm a little hesitant was just the fact that it seems like he wakes up, he's totally fine, it's transient. But then I love Charmin's like reasoning on how this might fit.
All right, well, you guys are hot on the trail of this case. So let me give you one more piece of information. Actually, two pieces of information. First is an MRI brain with contrast was actually completely unremarkable.
Hmm.
I love that's Arcee's response after every single...
I love Arcee's response. I feel like Arcee always has to respond when it's a negative study.
All right, so MRI brain with contrast, unremarkable, no ischemic changes, no lesions. Honestly, these days when it comes to MRI, I feel like there's like so many different phases that you can do and what is good for evaluating what. I think it's a discussion that I always have with radiology, to be honest, because like I feel like all of these have their own like sensitivity and specificity for what you're looking for. Anecdotally, I remember just like because you have a normal scan doesn't mean like you don't have seizure disorder, especially like epilepsy. There might be some clues that can be helpful in an MRI, but I think I would still like get an EEG at this point.
I love it. Pearls on pearls on pearls. Like whenever you get a study before being falsely reassured, just thinking about the test characteristics of that study, I think is a huge pearl.
All right. An EEG is performed, my friends. Your final clue, an EEG reveals.
Wow.
I hear some clapping already. I love it. So focal epileptiform discharges preceded by slow waves restricted to the anterior temporal areas. What is your final DX, friends?
I thought that was the final DX.
No, it's technically your final clue. I don't have to. You get to, now you get to submit your answer.
Charmin, you did all the hard work. So
is it actually called ictal syncope? Is that what this entity is called? Okay.
That's exactly right. That I think that should be our final answer.
Ding, 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 ding. Oh, Team CVS are so good.
But listen, it's not about the diagnosis. It's about the journey. Unless what, team?
Unless we get the diagnosis, baby.
Guys, it was so much fun watching you go through this. And I was just like filled with so much pride being part of this team. But it was actually really sad that I couldn't join this. I had so much joy reading this case to you. But oh my God, you guys just absolutely killed it. It was so cool watching you guys be so systematic and say, you know what? No way. I'm not going to miss a cardiac cause. Like even with all this data, even with a normal exam and a normal EKG, let's get an echo. Let's think about a cardiac MRI. But then like as soon as the case started to shift away from the heart, like zeroing in on the brain was just magical. Let me just tell you a little bit about what happened to this patient. So he was diagnosed with ictal asystole, and because of the risk of sudden cardiac death, he actually got a pacemaker. And you were spot on about the pathophysiology. So it's actually not 100% known because the diagnosis is super rare, but it's felt to be a discharge through the vagus nerve and a vagal tone that causes the asystole. And the pearl that this awesome case has is that diffuse atonia has consistently been observed as a feature of seizure associated with arrhythmia. So if you know that somebody has epilepsy and they all of a sudden, instead of seizing, lose all muscle tone, think about asystole occurring in that patient.
Arcee, I am so happy we had Charmizi.
100%.
And you know, I just want to highlight like the power of a crowd, you know, the wisdom of crowd. And I think none of us, well, maybe Charmin.
I think Charmin would have gotten this.
I can say, I think Arcee and I would not have arrived at the like Charmin, I think it was really your, at the pivot point.
No, definitely
like,
not.
Sort of
definitely
my
not.
Flawed thinking in terms of like having to have post-ictal phase and then like masterfully saying, what if it takes a small part of the brain and you don't witness that? So I mean, this is the power of crowdsourcing.
That's a wrap, folks.
Pause. Guys,
you're such a lovely team. Oh my God, the synergy, the back and forth.
I love you guys so much.
I was just, my heart's melting watching it.